Hello, it's Dan Lebatard. You know what we're asking you for around here to keep everything free under the Lebatard and Friends umbrella that we are building out slowly. We're asking you to rate, review, and subscribe. We're going to get to Joe Buck in a second. You know why he's interesting. He's polarizing for some reason, reasons I don't understand, but he tells great stories on our show. He told us about the pot brownie experience that ended in delirium and hysterical laughter. He told us about peeing in a bucket during a major sporting event because he didn't have time to go to the bathroom, his addiction to hair plugs. He's perfectly comfortable being vulnerable in these settings, so let's get to know him a little bit in a second. But first, let's tell you about one of our sponsors. ZipRecruiter is helping keep South Beach Sessions free, helping us expand everything here in a way that doesn't make you pay for it, and they also help you with the hiring of employees in a way that can save you money. We've told you before that you know what's not smart. Job boards that just assume qualified candidates will see and apply to your job post.
Oh, man, you're talking my language right now, Dan. That was so professional. Keep going. Please, don't stop.
Yeah, you could tell how comfortable I am. You know what is smart, though? Going to ZipRecruiter.com/beach to hire the right person. The only way we get credit for you supporting our show and ZipRecruiter is if you go to ZipRecruiter.com/beach so they know that we're the ones sending you there.
Oh, Dan, you know, we're always talking in the halls about how ZipRecruiter is the best place to find qualified candidates for you. You know how we talk about that in the hallways all the time.
We do, right? All the time.
All the time. And we talk about its powerful matching technology that scans thousands of resumes.
Thousands.
To identify people with the right skills, education, and experience. And it actively invites them to apply for your job.
Not passively, actively.
Actively. So you get the most qualified candidates and fast.
Fast is important there, and so is qualified.
Over the water cooler, we were discussing how ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers.
We don't have a water cooler.
In the U.S., we do. Well, we have a fridge
that's
stocked with water
bottles. That's where we were discussing it?
Yeah, and we were discussing how ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S. This rating comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. Aren't you impressed by that?
I am, of course.
I mean, so.
Right? I thought it would just be 100 reviews, but it's 1,000.
It's 1,000, which is a lot. So right now, what we should ask is for our South Beach Session listeners to go and try ZipRecruiter for free. You can't get more affordable than that, right? At this exclusive web address. You've said it once already. I'm going to say it again. ZipRecruiter.com/beach. If you love this show and you want to continue to support it and support ZipRecruiter, who's taking a chance on us, go to ZipRecruiter.com/beach. That's B-E-A-C-H. ZipRecruiter.com.
We need your help there on the beach, okay? This is how we show the advertiser that you're listening to this and that we're the ones who sent you there. So what is the slogan for ZipRecruiter, Mike?
It's the smartest way to hire.
Let's get to Joe Buck. You know, we like to talk to interesting people about interesting things around here, and I feel like Joe Buck has been miscast, that many of you have an opinion of Joe Buck that is inaccurate, or some of you have an opinion of Joe Buck. He is not a stiff, smug know-it-all. He's a charming know-it-all. So Joe Buck with us. I'm curious. I just found out that you got tatted up. You got tatted up late in life, that you got bicep tattoos. I love this about you.
I did. The only thing that didn't come with the tattoos were the biceps. It's kind of a disappointment when you have to get that worked on by a guy in a tattoo parlor in mid-Missouri, and then you realize when you kind of pull the sleeve back that he's basically working on flab.
Okay, but beyond that, though, the idea, you got into your 40s here, and this is love that made you do this. I want to talk to Joe Buck about how he got turned upside down.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I've... You know, maybe I got turned right side up. I was upside down for a while, I think, personally. Not in any bad way or any alarming situation type thing, but I think I was a pretty unhappy person, at some point aging, human walking this earth. And after going through a divorce and getting through all of the, you know, kind of the rundown and the anxiety and the guilt that is associated with divorce when you have children, I think, more than for any other reason. You know, I met Michelle, who's now my wife, and while she's younger than me, I think because she looks younger than she is and I look older than I am, the age gap appears to be way weirder than it actually is. It's only 7 years, but, you know, I realize that after coming out of the divorce that I don't know that I ever really was in a great place as an adult in a marriage. And I'm sure my ex-wife probably say the same thing. You know, I think you grow over time. And, yeah, I mean, I know we got into this on tattoos, and it was kind of like a little symbolic thing that I put on me to not forget kind of that little patch that I went through during the divorce and you know, kind of coming out of the other end of it.
She helped get you to happy?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think ultimately I've been through enough therapy to know that ultimately that's really up to the person, not somebody else, to make the person happy. And so I don't heap all that honor, but you know, we have fun and we laugh and we're both in the business, and she's been a great stepmom and my daughters adore her. And now, you know, here we sit a handful of years later and she and I are parents of 7-month-old twin boys. And so it's gone kind of fast and furious here, but yeah, beyond happy. I mean, I think content is a better word than happy. I think when you're content, and I'm 49 years old and I feel like I work hard and I do the best job I can, content is a good place to be at this point in my life.
This might be a dumb question, but did you know you were unhappy?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I don't know that outside of a therapist's office, it's fair to talk about your relationship with somebody who isn't even represented in the conversation. I think we were, my ex-wife and I were, I think, really good parents. And the best thing I can say, and I think at the end of it all, you know, she was my first ever girlfriend. We went out when we were 15. We broke up and got back together over the, I don't know, 7 years or so between 15 and when we got married. I got married at 23. There were some other people in there that we both dated separately, but I think, you know, we didn't really know any different. And as we started to grow, I think we started to realize more who we were as people. And then, you know, eventually once you have kids, you're kind of in it for the kids. And when that balance tipped, and I wrote about this in the book that I probably came on your show a couple of years ago and hawked, I think when you realize that the balance goes from it's better for us for the kids to stay together to I don't really think we're showing them a good example of what a man and a woman should be as husband and wife, once that balance swung, you had to make a change. And I think everybody's better off. That's easy for me to say, but I think if you had my daughters on, which would be an interesting podcast, I think they would agree. You know, I just spent time with them. They're both up and out of the house and they're older, but they realize how good of a person Michelle is, and that what we had going on there was probably not ideal for them to replicate as they got older in life.
Mike, get on that, okay? Next podcast, I want to talk to the Buck siblings.
Yeah, Natalie and Trudy Buck, they would be far more interesting than me.
How does this work, though? I'd like to explore this if you're willing, because I'm curious, when you are going through all of this, are you saying to yourself, but how could I be unhappy? I have, you know, reached many of my professional dreams.
No, I think you do. I mean, I think you'd be unaware to not realize that people are, you know, they don't have it as good as you do. And I got into this because I was around it as a kid. I got into this as a profession because I was, you know, when I got hired in Louisville to do AAA baseball, I was 19 and I was still in college. And when I got hired to do the Cardinals baseball radio job, I was 21. And that doesn't happen if my last name's not Buck. And that doesn't happen if my dad isn't a Hall of Fame broadcaster in town. But then you have to take it and run with it. And I worked hard to try to bust out of some of that. I'll never bust out of all of that, especially in other people's eyes. And that's fine because he and I were the best of friends. But I got to a certain level and you think, man, professionally, this is beyond anything I ever imagined. Even as Jack Buck's kid growing up, I didn't expect to do all this stuff. But personally, you know, I think that's the real stuff. You know, I would hope that whenever I do go toes up, my headstone doesn't have anything to do with Fox or broadcasting or anything else. I'd like to think it would have to do with being a loving husband and a great father to four kids, who at that point I hope are all adults. And, you know, that's the real stuff. So I think
It's going to be the HBO show. It's going to be the HBO show. Artie Lang. It's going to be
good. Yeah. Here, all it'll say is Joe Buck, 1969, and then whatever the end date is, and then under it, it's going to say Artie Lang did this.
What did you think? I want to cover some of this with you. I want to talk about that experience. But you got so much so young. You were a real wonder kid. Like, no, very few broadcasting careers have happened as fast as yours. Have you ever had a moment atop sports like the one that I had where I had to walk away from writing because I'm watching a celebration of the Miami Heat on the court, and I'm like, I'm not feeling this. I've written this before. I've already done all of this dogpiling on court stuff. I got to imagine you've had some of that happen to you when you're having all this success at an early age.
No, I don't think that I've ever – I think that's a great question, and I completely understand what you're saying with that. And I think at some point it's going to get there. But I can honestly tell you, I don't think that I've ever been in a position where, you know, you're writing the story. I'm trying to apply my voice in the present tense to those moments, and that's never even approached getting old to me. I love that. I love the build to that, like in a 7-game series or, you know, throughout the month of October, or all the hype and build up for a Super Bowl. When you get to that moment, that's as good as it gets for somebody who does what I do. But I think the process can wear you down. I don't know. I feel like now I feel like an NFL head coach when they talk about that stuff. But I think that when you prepare for all these games, and then you're getting on an airplane, and then you got kind of the stress at home, whether it's in the past life or it's in the current life with twin boys that are 7 months old, you know, it can wear you down. But I think the main thing is you realize that I'm so lucky and fortunate, and I don't say that trying to be corny. I honestly believe that. I saw my dad work 10 times harder than I work now, make 10 times less than I make now, and be probably 10 times happier than I've ever been. He just kind of whistled through life and was able to glide in and out of media lunchrooms and do his job. I think it was at a time when, you know, obviously social media wasn't around, and I think he felt pretty unfettered doing what he did and kind of said whatever came through his mind. It's just a different profession now, and there's so many filters that I have to put in between a thought in my head and what comes out of my mouth, that by the time it comes out of my mouth, it's just watered down. So I think, you know, that's always the challenge. Every time I go into the booth, it's like, okay, I know what's going on. I know kind of some of the funnier stuff I want to do. I know some of the edgier stuff or the more opinionated stuff that I want to do. But is it really worth what's going to follow? Is it really worth the fallout? Whether it's social media, which I really don't pay a ton of attention to, or the articles that get written that eventually filter back to your bosses, is it really worth all that to throw your chin out there and stick your neck out? Most of the time, the answer is no.
What is the best part of the job?
When the game kicks off, when the first pitch is thrown, you know, whatever the sport is. I used to do college basketball when they tip it off. You know, then you just kind of take your work, and if you've prepared right, I mean, I think you kind of throw it away and you just watch and react and enjoy the game and enjoy the strategy of it. And, you know, and I think working with the people I've gotten to work with, Troy and I talked about this the other day, that we're number two all time to Madden and Summerall, which is mind blowing to me that we're, you know, that we're number two on that list. If you believe social media, I don't know. I have never counted them up. I don't know how many anybody's done, so that could be right or wrong. But the point is, we've been together a long time, and we really enjoy each other. And I had a great relationship with Tim McCarver, and I have a really good relationship with John Smoltz. And I enjoy kind of going, navigating my way through a game, baseball or football, with the person I'm working with. And at the end, feeling like we've covered it, had fun, and did a good job, and, you know, let the social media reaction be what it is. It doesn't really matter, and you know when you do well, and that's satisfying. That's the best part.
We'll get back to our conversation with Joe Buck in a moment, but one of the things that allows the podcast to breathe and exist is an absence of commercials, but everything we do that pays for everything around here is with commercials, salaries, everything. So we ask you to tolerate a couple of minutes of advertisements on behalf of our sponsors that are supporting this stuff and keeping it free.
Just get to the DraftKings spot, Dan. I listen not for the interview. I listen for the spots.
And this is one that you will recognize. It is the newest way to play. It's a single game showdown. It's the final opportunity to play fantasy football this season.
Oh, man, DraftKings. It's the industry standard, Dan. You're not saying DraftKings enough. The sponsor's going to want you to do that more.
All right, go to DraftKings.com. Download the app now. Now, for a limited time, you use the code BEACH to enter the all-new Single Game Showdown contest for free this Sunday with your first deposit. It's a $5 minimum. You could win up to $1 million only at DraftKings, and the code is BEACH. We need you to go to DraftKings.com for details, and we need that code to be beat.
Oh, look at all the cool things they're doing for this big game. I can draft a team with up to 6 players. That means I'm invested with 6 players during the big game. I can captain one, and his points are 1.5 times normal. I'm going to win so much on DraftKings, and all I got to do is go to DraftKings.com, download the app, and for a limited time, use that promo code that you told me. What is it again, Dan?
Beach.
Oh, Beach. B-E-A-C-H. I just typed that in, and I can enter this free contest on Sunday to watch the big game and have some investment going on in here. I had my 6 players, had my captain win this money. So go to DraftKings.com. Remember, it's the game inside of the big game.
Which is the big game? Because there's some big Argentinian soccer games being played this weekend.
It's the team from the West Coast and the team that's been in the big game, I think, less than 10 times, I can't say the exact number, I think, legally, but they're on the East Coast.
That was well done.
And they meet in the Peach State.
Okay, that's ambiguous enough to allow us to slippery slide around the copyright stuff?
Yes, the only thing that you're allowed to say is DraftKings.
Okay, very good. That's the only thing you're allowed to do as well, by the way.
And Dan, you know I love our listeners, so please don't forget to tell them a minimum $5 deposit is required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Actually, I don't think you have to tell them. I think I just did.
Now back to Joe Buck. What are some of the things that your father would look at in your life and be like, are you shitting me? This is how they treat you.
If my dad were to, and I think about this all the time, were to come back, you know, he passed away in 2002, so much has changed, and so much has changed in the business that he loved so much. I think the only reason why I'm doing it is because I saw how much my dad loved being a broadcaster and being around athletes and being around the general public and delivering the news, so to speak, of their team winning or losing. I think he would be shocked at, you know, how you're not really allowed to be yourself. And I say that because I think my dad just said whatever was on his mind. And I talked about it in my book, you know, where I said some of the things that he said back in the day, lines that I could remember, you know, that was him. And I'm not so sure that personality is allowed if you want to just at least go by social media reaction, which I think is a big mistake. But be that as it may, I think he was just that guy that saw it, said it, felt it, said it, and these days you have to really be careful. And when I wrote about it in my book, somebody took me to task when they were asking me questions about it, saying, well, are you saying that was a better time? Or are you saying that that's how you feel and you're just masking it? And I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that a lot of the old-time guys, my dad, Harry Carey, Bob Prince, different people like that, that were known to be larger than life personalities. I'm just not so sure the general public is accepting of that. If you pay any attention to kind of the knee jerk reaction of people on social media, so I think the entire idea, Dan, of kind of watching what you say would be an absolute foreign feeling to him if he were to come back in 2018.
What do you imagine he would dislike the most about the way the job has changed?
Well, I don't think he'd like social media. I think that, and I don't care what you do, I think if you do something publicly, social media is there to bash you. And if you have an opinion or if you have a sense of humor or if, and I'm not saying social media is all bad. It isn't. Obviously, it's a great informational tool. I use it. You know, I use Instagram, but it's a private account. I like to connect with friends that way. So there's a lot of good to it, as well. But I think for somebody in the public life, it is ready to smack you if you step out of the midline. And if you live in the midline, and if you don't take any chances, if you don't ever have an opinion, if you don't try and lighten it up, if you don't, you know, whatever, I think you're boring. And I think that my dad was a lot of things. One thing he wasn't was boring. I think it's scary to think that a lot of people are jumping into this business and could have their personality just wiped right out of them the minute they start because somebody says they suck or they're stupid.
You sound like it's made you weary. I know we've talked a lot about this over the years, and your points on this are well taken. But you sound like you're tired of it. Like you're fundamentally tired of, I keep going out here and doing this famous thing, and what's going to happen after that is just going to be poisonous piranha.
Well, yeah, I mean, it can wear you down. You know, I did an interview leading into my Patriots game with a kid from WEEI. And, you know, then they lift pieces out of that interview. And, you know, then that becomes its own social media thing. And then people weigh in. And then somebody writes an article on it. And it's, you know, you want to go, wait a minute. First of all, that's not what I said. It was about the ratings being down. And I said, I've done this long enough to know if you get 6 or 7 games, the ratings are going to be pretty good. And if you get 4 or 5 games, they're going to be down compared to a 7-game series the year before. That's just the way it is. And that was my main point. And then talking about kind of the analytics-driven game of baseball and how that's changed. And then all of a sudden, social media wants you to go on an apology tour for having an opinion, which is, that is bothersome. And you know, it is, it can make you weary trying to chase that stuff down if you let it. But after it dies down after a day and you just kind of stand your ground, so what? I mean, but fighting that little short battle can get a little tedious sometimes, and it's just I'm not whining about it, but it's just part of the job now.
I'm wondering, as you have grown in this profession, I read things about you that suggest you might be getting out of some of these big games, right? You might be tired, not tired, but just am I reading this right? Am I reading these reports right about you're going to cut back?
Well, first of all, I don't think anybody really cares. And secondly, I said that when I was promoting my book with regard to baseball because my contract was running down. And I was at a point, I don't know what time of year it was when I was talking, but it was not long after another World Series. It was probably after the Cubs World Series. And my point was that someday somebody else is going to do this, whether it's next year or in 3 years or whatever. And I said, you know, and at some point that's a good thing. I've done 21 World Series now. It's going to get time here at some point, you know, for somebody else's voice to carry that. I've just been lucky. I didn't win some national talent search to get to do the World Series every year. I happen to be at the right network that keeps paying for the rights. So because I haven't said, you know, something horribly stupid on the air, they allow me to keep doing it. And, you know, at some point that's not going to be the case. So I don't know what's next. I'm signed for another 4 years. And, you know, my schedule's going to be what it's been this past year for the next 4 years. And after that, we'll see. But, you know, there are other things out there. But, my God, the thing I love to do the most professionally is what I'm doing. So that's nothing that I fight. Trust me on that.
Vin Scully told us a story that I'd like to play for you now. And hopefully you've got, I don't know if you'll have something to rival this, but hopefully you've got something in your arsenal that can be embarrassing the way this was.
Back about my third year, about 1952, the Dodgers were playing Cincinnati, and Cincinnati had an outfielder named Lloyd Merriman. I'll never forget it. And Lloyd hit a ball foul. And my mind told me to say, hot shot, hit, foul.
No! Oh, no, Vin!
And it never came out that way. And everybody in the booth fell down, and I was absolutely mortified. And the reason I remember Lloyd Merriman, I started filling. He's a former Marine Air Corps pilot, saw combat in Korea. You know, I did on and on. That really that had to be, considering how young I was. That was about it.
I hope that puts a smile on your face. It does on mine every time I hear it.
Oh, so good. I mean, first of all, you could listen to him through anything just because he's been, and that voice is great, and the delivery is just so smooth. Amazing that he did it as long as he did until he was 88 and was as crisp in some ways as he ever was in his final year. But I mean, easily the biggest foot in my mouth moment came with Brooks Koepka winning the U.S. Open, and I've got the wrong girlfriend that somebody handed me on a card, which is not me bowing out of responsibility. But I'm like, there's, whatever I said, Brooks something or whatever, and I get through I read through this card, because she kept popping up in every picture, every camera shot when Brooks is hoisting the trophy, and then Brad Faxon, who I'm working with, goes, "No, actually, Joe, that's his new girlfriend, Jenna Sims." And I thought, oh, my God, we just did 28 hours a day of live TV, and that's kind of our get out, everybody, moment. And that's the last thing I'm leaving them with. But, at some point, all you can do is laugh. I mean, it's live TV, and whether it's 1952 or 3 or it's 2016, 17, or whatever, things are going to happen, and you're not going to be perfect. And I think striving to be perfect is going to, again, lead you back into Boringville. So, the same person that handed me that card handed me 30 cards during the course of the week that made me sound way smarter and way more well-read about the PGA Tour than I actually was. So I have to wear it and live with it. The guy felt terrible, and I was embarrassed, but that's life on live TV. And I think, those moments kind of bring the real part of it all back into your mind. Like, man, this is kind of a high wire act. And if you screw up now, it's going to get relived for a long time. In 2001, really quick, Tony Womack of the Diamondbacks hit a game-winning base hit against the Cardinals in the division series.
Oh, I remember this.
He had just lost his father during the course of the year, and I was talking about it leading into this at bat, and Father's Day was so special, and then here's the 2-2 pitch, base hit into right, Diamondbacks, so-and-so's coming to the plate, Diamondbacks win, and they put a headset on him down on the field, and I'm interviewing him from the booth. And this mob of people, and this woman comes up and hugs him. And I think these guys are so young, and I've just been talking about his dad. I go, "Hey, is that your mom hugging you?" He goes, "It's like the needle came off the record." He goes, "No, man, that's my wife." And I was like, oh, my God. That was national television, and I just called his wife his mother. And actually went down, apologized to him. He was laughing about it. I bought her flowers and gave them to her in the next series, and then he became a Cardinal, and I got to know him pretty well after the fact. He was great, but that was pre-social media, thank God.
I wish that I and the audience could see the real Joe Buck during broadcast, because I know how polished you are, but I don't feel like the audience, America's audience, has been listening to you for a long time. I don't feel like they have a real understanding of how funny you are. That if you were allowed to do that broadcast the way that you wanted to, it would probably be a lot different.
Yeah, it'd probably be a lot more interesting, and it would probably get me fired within 5 minutes. Nobody is dumb enough to go, "Yeah, no, thanks, Danny. I'm a really funny guy." I don't know about that, but I do know that I do jump through a lot of hoops in my mind before something comes out of my mouth. Like, I was just doing a game a couple of weeks ago, and this is a dumb example and not funny after your preamble, but so one of the offensive linemen was flagged for tripping, and I like, my initial reaction was to say something about Hunter S. Thompson, like, and you know who else was guilty of that, Troy Aikman? Nobody tripped like Hunter S. Thompson. And then I thought, A, that's probably not smart to say. B, Troy's not going to know who the hell Hunter S. Thompson is, so I'm not going to say it for a couple of reasons. But that's the kind of stuff that, the devil on my shoulder swallows,
well,
I have to go the other way.
I would love to hear you in the booth with just Paul Rudd. Two talking about the game where we didn't have to treat it like the cathedral that the NFL wants us to treat it like.
No, he and I would both enjoy that. And that's, by the way, that's why I do Brockmeyer. That's why I go on Stern. That's why I'll do a podcast with somebody like you, because I like to be myself, and I like to wear the other hat or just try to let the guard down a little bit. The guard's still up on a podcast like this, but when somebody else writes lines for you in a show like Brockmeyer, or you go on Howard Stern and you're talking about your sex life with your wife sitting in the next seat, I think people get to see another side, and that is nothing but good for me unless I really say something stupid.
What did Howard Stern make you squirm the most on?
Well, the first interview was great. I've been on twice. The first one was great, pretty straightforward. You know, he's not a big sports guy. He enjoyed it enough to have me back. And I talked a lot about my dad because I was selling my book the first time around. It all went great. What made me squirm was when I brought my wife to the second one. She's in the green room. He does the, oh, bring her out. And you know he's on the internet. People are sending him pictures on his computer while he's talking to me that she was an ex-Denver Broncos cheerleader. Here are some pictures of her, and now she sits down, and he starts going into, you know, like, Michelle, my wife, says, well, you know, I did keep the white leather chaps that we wore on field as a Denver Bronco cheerleader, and then that started in on the kind of sex stuff, which all I think about are my 22 and 19-year-old daughters that are listening in two different parts of the world. And when it was over, my 22-year-old called me and said, I literally threw up in my mouth listening to you talk about sex.
We'll talk to them about it in our next podcast. Trudy.
Trudy and Natalie, you got it.
Trudy and Natalie. You went down the path. I remember where I was because I was talking to Eric Rideholm as your show came on HBO, and HBO hadn't really done sports very well to that point. And I had high hopes for you and that show because I thought your real personality would come over time if they allowed the show to find its voice. And I was talking to...
I agree with that, by the way.
Yeah, I think it would have been great. I think it would have been great, and you would have... done some really special things at HBO. But I remember talking to my executive producer when your show came on, and he just started screaming no because they had put you in front of the comedian stand-up wall, you know, and asked you basically to do the cold open that all the late-night funny comedians do. And so and I remember he said that because he thought it would put the expectation of funny too high right from the start. And then, of course, you have Artie Lang, and he just sets fire to the place.
Yeah, I think a lot of what you just said, there's a lot of truth in that. I don't mind the expectation. I got to host a Late Late Show, I don't know, back in 04 maybe, somewhere in there, when they were making that transition to Craig Ferguson after Kilborn, and they were having everybody, like Nipsey Russell was hosting it, everybody was hosting the show, and I got to do it two nights, and did the whole late night stuff, did the jokes, did the stuff at the desk, and it went well enough that the executive producer was like, if Letterman gets hit by a bus tomorrow, you're the guy I'm going to CBS to have them hire. That's it. And it was one of the greatest compliments I've ever been paid after a job by somebody, this guy Peter LaSalle, who had done it forever and was Letterman's guy and was Carson's guy beforehand. So I don't mind that expectation. But I think HBO was in a position where they really hold their sports arm as kind of this highbrow, journalistically sound. You know, I was taking over for Costas. Bob and I are very good friends, but very different people. And I don't know that they wanted me to be Costas, but they certainly didn't want me to preside over what it ended up being with Artie by the end of the show. And that's really what pissed me off the most. And I've gone over this 1,000 times with 1,000 different people, but it never bothered me. I mean, I think if you go back and you watch it, when the director cuts to me, it's an uncomfortable position to be in. But I had told Artie to do whatever he wanted to do. This is HBO at night. If we cannot have fun right now, and if it's not perfect, and if it's not journalistically sound, who cares? It's a live television show. Then, you know, it was almost to the point after the fact that I had to threaten to quit just to get Artie back on in the cold open in the second show. The problem was we never did a pilot. We never really did anything until it was live in your living room in Omaha. And
what?
I only got they.
That's
they
crazy.
Were,
what do you mean? You never did any practice?
We never did any practice. So I went out there. I read the introduction at the beginning, and then it was like, all right, let's go. It was a live show. There was really nothing to do. It was live, and you just had to live with the result. And I think instead of embracing it, HBO went preserved and just wanted it like wiped off the face of the earth. And I never understood that. I still don't. It's on HBO. I get it. It's under the sports heading, but it's like on 3 minutes before Pornucopia 2. And you can't really distinguish. I don't think the viewer really cares. It's late night. Make it entertaining. And if it's entertaining, then, I think there's some value to it. And that's, I got lumped in with HBO's reaction, and it was never my reaction. And that's why Artie became a friend of mine to the point where I wrote the introduction to the second book.
You have never comedically used a word more flawlessly than you just used pornucopia. I wish that we could hear stuff like that on the Fox broadcast because that was expertly done. And I also love that you made it pornucopia too.
Well, yeah. I mean, it got better after the first one. You got to find your way, and then all of a sudden you get your voice, and Pornucopia 2 was way better. It's like Godfather 2, better than the original.
What would you go back and do differently, and what did you imagine that show becoming? Because, I really did have high hopes for it. I was just I thought that was going to produce opportunities for all of us. I really did, because I knew how good you were at that job, and I knew how underrated clever you are. And so I'm like, he's going to crush it because he's great at television. And of all places, for HBO not to give it more of a chance than that.
I mean, I think you have to live, whether it's me saying the Randy Moss thing was disgusting or me calling a home run to win a World Series in the moment. I mean, you have to live with what you do, and you have to be proud of what the end result is. I still like those shows, and the thing that really pissed me off is the rating was really good, and the rating was building over the hour that we were on, and it was better than what was there before. And after all that fallout, I said to their PR guy, can you at least release the notion that the rating was strong? And with regard to that number, it was a success. Well, we don't talk ratings at HBO. And I was like, my God, I'm getting my hat handed to me. The ratings were good. So would I do anything differently? I don't know. I think I've grown since then. I think if I was sitting on that couch now and already went into what he went into, I'd like to think that I would be better prepared to handle it. But I'm not going to win the sparring match. That's not going to happen. I'm going to get my, I'm going to get my ass handed to me. And then, two, how much can I really say without blowing any image that I've created? The guy doing the Super Bowl or the guy doing the World Series is down there trading barbs with Artie Lang. It's just not a good look.
I feel like I want to go into a project with you where it's Joe Buck works blue. I feel like you've got this whole dirty underbelly that we can explore. Come on, man. You're free. You're confident. You're in love. You're a man who's got strong convictions and is weary by social media.
Nothing happens in a vacuum. Nothing happens where whatever I were to say is not going to bleed over into the other parts of my life.
You talked about your sex life on Stern, Buck.
That's true, but I think when you do it, I don't know, he's in his own silo over there. If you and I do a project and I'm going down those paths on my own, then I run the risk of ending a great living that I've created for myself.
Do you, though? Because you admitted in the book, you told a couple of the greatest stories ever told on this show, the one about peeing in the booth and the one about the pot brownie. Like, you revealed a lot in your book that people didn't know. You felt the need to do that and the freedom. You found freedom in it.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you're not going to convince me to do anything on your podcast right now. We're not going to enter into some agreement where the next thing I know, I'm walking out on a stage at Caroline's in New York, and it's being piped on Bleacher Report, who did the match.
That's my dream.
I get it. I think someday there'll be some room for that in my life. Just that day is not now.
Well, I know you're out of time here, buddy. I could talk to you for another hour, but thank you for stopping through here.
But nobody would listen.
They're going to listen to the podcast with your daughters, and they're also going to listen when we blow this out into becoming, you know, a big Joe Buck works blue, and we ruin your entire career. We're going to do that in the future, I hope.
That's exactly what would happen. So that's why I can't do it. But this will be, we'll roll this before the Kirk comes up on our two-man show.
Many hugs to you, my friend. Thank you for doing this. I know you've got many other things that you could be doing that are better than this, so I appreciate it.
It's a friggin' podcast, man. There's nothing I want to do more right now than a podcast. So thank you for letting me live my dream today.
See you later.
All right, bye.
Our thanks to Joe Buck. One of the efforts we're trying to make around here is to pull back the curtain a little bit on people you may think you know. Next week, we're going to talk to Two Live Crew frontman Luther Campbell, the guy at the center of a lot of Miami stuff, a lot of hip-hop stuff in Miami that's fascinating. He's got some great stories inside and outside of sports. The ones inside of sports are crazy. The ones outside of sports are crazier. Next week, Luther Campbell.